Welcome to Scrappy ABM. This is your podcast with practical playbooks that don't break the bank. In this podcast, we dig into the exact playbooks that ABM practitioners are using today to get their first ABM program off the ground. We'll dig into how they're using their current tech stack in order to create scrappy programs that rely more on creativity than new technologies. So if you're looking for how to get ABM off the ground in your organization in the next 90 days, let's dive into this episode. Welcome to this episode of Scrappy ABM. I am incredibly excited you're here, and this is actually probably going to be one of my favorite episodes that we've recently released. It's actually coming from a webinar that we did a couple weeks back, and they were kind enough to let us reuse it here. We do a ton of deep dives on specifically how to build a program. So if there's any questions, feel free to reach out to me. And also, we try to drop the link to every webinar that we repurpose in the show notes. So if you want to see the visuals as well, go check out the show notes to see the full replay of that webinar. We'll see you in this episode.
Welcome back to the Pod Profit Summit. I'm really honored with our session right now to be joined by Mason Cosby. So Mason runs a really cool, unique company, as you can see with his shirt and hat, called Scrappy ABM, which he will explain what ABM, account-based marketing, actually means, sort of as a preface to what he's going to talk about specific to podcasting today. But Mason and I met through the StoryBrand community. He's a former StoryBrand guide, just a really smart guy doing some really impressive things with a relatively new business. And he has a very niche and effective podcast. And so what he's going to teach us today is how to know if your podcast is working, right? Like, how do you measure success as a podcaster? So whether you have a podcast, and you probably have that question, or you're thinking about starting a podcast, you should be asking this question. So we've got Mason here to share his experience and knowledge about that. So Mason, welcome. I would love for you to maybe just take the mystery away of explaining what ABM is all about. Yeah. And then I'd love for you to hop right into your topic of how to know if we're being successful with our podcast efforts.
Well, first, Dustin, thanks so much for having me. And yeah, excited to just kind of dig in specifically as we think about account-based marketing. So yeah. If you are a B2C business, I'm going to actually save a lot of your time. I have nothing for you. Account-based marketing is exclusive to B2B. So as you think about the terminology, account-based marketing, it is focused on the companies or accounts that are your best fit customers. So that sounds really basic, and it is in theory. It's very difficult in practice because most of the time marketing programs today and have historically been built around lead generation. So it's how do we get as many contacts in our database? And then from those contacts that come to our database, then we pass all of these leads to sales, and then sales does everything in their power to get meetings booked. And then they kind of force them through the pipeline, and then they end up closing them, and they may not have actually been a good fit in the first place, but they were leads that were here. So we're going to take those leads. And then CS's job, which stands for customer success. So the success team or the service team's job is to hold on to them for dear life, to try to keep them around for as long as possible. And everyone hates this. No one likes it, because sales is like, wow, these leads are crap. And marketing feels like they're underappreciated. CS hates sales because they closed really bad fit customers. And then the customers hate CS and your company because you shouldn't close them in the first place, because you actually can't help them. So what account-based marketing does is, instead of focusing on everyone, it says, well, who's our best fit customer? Like, who's actually the best kind of people that we can work with? And then what if we stopped doing things to engage people that weren't those people, and then only did things to engage these specific people? And what I like about account-based marketing is it moves from persona to person, or from like ICP, which stands for ideal client profile, to companies. Like, these are the clients we want to work with. So I like this approach because you literally look at a list and are like, these are the companies we want to work with. And everybody's like, great, we're all agreed. Let's go get them. So from an efficiency perspective, if done well, it decimates every other kind of strategy. Like 70% increase in pipeline growth. Like from a value perspective, 70% increase in pipeline velocity, 70% increase in sales team satisfaction, 70% increase in customer lifetime value, like 70 plus across all these stats. The challenge is, for most people, I framed it as when done well. Where most people get messed up on this is they don't know what their best fit customer, they don't know who their best fit customer is. So if you're super, super early stage, I don't recommend ABM as a starting point. ABM works exceptionally well when, again, you're a B2B company, you've got someone dedicated to sales, typically, and I'll outline an exception, but typically not the founder. So typically not founder-led sales. You've got at least an average contract of $50,000 at least. And there's an exception to that as well, which I'll outline here in just a moment. You've got a clear market focus. So one of our clients had a total addressable market, meaning every person they could possibly close, of 500 companies, because they worked in the compliance software space for specifically government-run utilities of specific sized cities. That's a niche of a niche of a niche of a niche. So like that was a program. We were just like, all right, well, we'll go after these 500 accounts. And then the other component, just for consideration, is typically longer than a 90-day sales cycle. So if you match B2B dedicated sales, $50,000 average contract value, 90-day sales cycle, clear market focus, and then the potential to expand the customer long term, you're a great fit for ABM. The asterisks on two things would be, one, when you think about account-based program, you can actually take an account-based program and apply that to podcasting, which is what we'll talk about here in just a moment. And if you are in that boat, founder-led sales is actually exceptionally great when running an account-based podcast. Like, kills it. And I'll walk through some of my stats here in just a moment. The next component is specifically that clear market focus. Like, if you have a total addressable market of 500 accounts, why would you run anything else? Like, you can
Yeah,
literally
why are
just
you
like, what are you
posting a
doing?
bunch of random content on YouTube and doing Twitter? It's like, why? Yeah, you only have 500 customers, go get them, right? And I'm gonna let Mason run with this teaching here, but I guess as a quick interjection, I never heard of this term, and I love it. Like I fell in love with it as soon as you started describing it. I'm like, this is like how I think. You know, this is how I think about podcast guesting. This is how I think about my own kind of small business growth. It's really about being intentional and saying, this is what I want, and getting clear on that, which is hard, right? You got to do that work to get clear on what you want. And then you set individual specific targets, and then you have something very specific to pursue with your content plan, with your messaging, with your energy, right? Versus spraying and praying and quote unquote branding. And like, this is very much in alignment with my ethos, even though I'm not a B2B, you know, I am B2B, but I'm not in this like sort of 50,000 and up sort of long tail sales cycle. I still love this approach in general, and I love how he's going to tie it to podcasting as a strategy. So, with that said, Mason, yeah, please continue to enlighten us.
So many people, they look at podcasting and they're like, I should go start a podcast because that looks awesome. Like, I get to make cool content, I get to interview cool guests. But the challenge is a couple of things. One, they don't actually know how to measure success, which is one of the actual top three reasons why ABM Pro, or sorry, why podcast programs fail. It's just they get going and they're like, I don't actually know what the goal is. Quickly, I'll end the other two reasons why it fails. A lack of consistency. So I'm sure this is talked about a ton and should be talked about a bunch today, but just like 90% of shows don't get past episode three. And I can't tell you, we have a podcast arm of our business, and our highest churn is actually on the onboarding process, because people will commit and then they're like, wait, I have to record seven episodes in 2 weeks to get the show launched. I'm like, well, yeah, like we launch with three episodes. From there, you have four episodes, so you've got a month of inventory. So it's a really heavy upfront lift, but then you actually get yourself some breathing room. You just can't do it. Like, they literally just are like, I just cannot commit to this. And I like, it's not a surprise. Like, I say, first call, I need you to commit 2 weeks. I'm gonna own you for 2 weeks and like produce you, and we'll get it done. And then the rest of your life forever is easier. So that's the first component, just a lack of consistency. Second reason podcast programs typically fail would just be a poor promotional strategy. So for just very quick context, why I address promotional strategy. In the past year, Scrappy ABM has launched from scratch about 14 shows. Six of them are in the top 10% of globally listened to shows. One of them is in the top 0.5% and is consistently in the top 10 of US-based marketing podcasts. So when I talk about promotional strategy, the way that this show grew was actually not to do with the content at first. Like, you need to have good content to like actually keep people around. But the way that it grew is they just killed it on promotion. Like, they had an intentional strategy around how to raise awareness for the show. Because fun fact, podcast search engines are atrocious, like the worst. So if you want to be easily discovered, it's not going to be because someone typically stumbles on you in Spotify unless you're looking for a very specific niche term. Typically, it's they find you in a different channel and then they go get depth on your show. So again, those are the three reasons: a lack of consistency, poor promotional strategy, and unclear measurement. What we're going to talk through for the rest of this is like, how do you actually then measure success? And I think that there are only three kinds of podcasts, and then we'll dictate how you should effectively measure success.
Perfect.
So as we think through the three types of podcasts, I'll just go ahead and quickly outline them. One is the content engine. Two is the public figure podcast. And then three is the account-based podcast. So when we think about the content engine, this is what likely most people start with when they think about building a show, is they want to build a show primarily because they want to create really, really great content. The thing that, and you should, if you don't know him, everybody go follow him. His name is Justin Simon. He created a distribution first framework. And I love this framework that's very helpful for actually how to think about it. Another guy would be Stephen G. Pope. That's done a wonderful job on content creation and content framework generation. But the idea is fairly simple. Most subject matter experts are really good at talking. They just are, like, they're good at communicating their ideas. That's why they're subject matter experts and typically inevitably become thought leaders. So to create content, it is exponentially easier for them to hop on a quick recording and talk. Like, that's it. They just share their information.
Yep.
From there, what happens now with most technologies is an auto-generated transcript. And then from there, a content marketer or a content writer or someone that is a specialist in content can take the transcript and turn that into a piece of blog content or numerous pieces of blog content. And then from there, they can create a variety of social posts. And then from there, they can create a variety of email newsletters. And then from there, they can also look at the long form video, edit it, and actually create a long form YouTube video. And then from there, they can actually create short clips that get posted on YouTube and TikTok for as long as that's still around, Instagram, LinkedIn, like, and what you end up doing is from 20 or 30 minutes of a subject matter expert's time, you can end up creating one long form video, typically 2 to 4 clips that you would then create in multiple formats so they can be distributed across every platform. You can create at least one piece of blog content and one email. And likely for every clip that you can create written content that goes along with that clip. So again, one 20, 30 minute episode turns into typically 18 to 25 pieces of content. So then how do you measure success? It's actually primarily on content output and by reach of that content, separate from the podcast. Yep. Now, I think most of you are probably thinking, what about downloads? I hate downloads as a metric of success. Like, quick context, my show, oh goodness, how many downloads did my show get? Typically, I'm getting about 200 to 300 downloads per episode. And that's really good because I have a very niche show.
This is the dirty little secret, I think, of podcast hosting is, you know, with, it's like the 1% of the 1% of the ones you hear about, right? Everyone, I want to be on Joe Rogan or Amy Porterfield or whatever. For one, those guys generally had platforms before the podcast became popular, to Mason's original point of promotion. And two, for the types of podcasts we're all talking about, which are generally business-oriented, B2B, subject matter, you know, niche sort of podcasts, yeah, these numbers aren't big. And so if the content strategy is the, or if the views or the download or the views, the impressions, the reach is the goal, it actually happens mostly through the non-podcast content that comes out of the podcast, which is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. And I'll just quickly read off some stats from Buzzsprout. So Buzzsprout is a large hosting distribution platform. You can Google this and just say like Buzzsprout average podcast downloads. It's like top 1% get 4,730 downloads within the first 7 days. So the top 1% of podcasts. I was talking with somebody that was thinking about launching a full podcast series, and he worked at a fairly large brand. And he said, the executive leadership team won't approve us to create more content until episode one gets 10,000 downloads. Like, not hypothetically. I was like, you understand that like top 1%, less than 5,000. So like, that's the starting point. Top 5% would be 1,099. Top 10% are 467, top 25% are 111, and the top 50% of podcasts get 28.
Wow. So like, so you're above average if you're getting 30 downloads, basically. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So it helps to put it in perspective. That's why I as a quick heads up, we'll actually never measure downloads as a measure of success, because the other component is, in order to actually generate a download, someone has to follow you and turn on auto downloads, which you can ask for. And that is a helpful thing to ask for. The other thing that I've seen, and it's actually different based on the platforms, like Spotify does this differently, Apple does this differently, and then all of the web browsers measure a download differently. But it is typically that they have to listen to every single second from beginning to end of the episode for it to then qualify as a download, unless it's an IAB download, which has actually been disbanded. But this was a few months back, and it was based on if you were on a web browser and you were on that web browser for a minute, it would then count as a download. So if you're in podcast hosting platforms, full length episode. If you're in a web browser, it's 1 minute on page, which, to also be clear, 1 minute on page does not mean that anyone even pressed play. So as I have now unpacked this, downloads, incredibly unreliable metric for success, like radically unreliable. So when you think about measure of success, it is typically reach in the external platforms. And then what you want to do is benchmark your downloads as your primary metric of success. Because what I do see is when you look at downloads within the first hour of your episode going live shows you how many people are subscribed to your show. And that is a helpful metric to track over time. Wow, that got really nerdy really quick.
That's
So,
good though, man. I think it's important to do that deep dive because I think you're going to get into the other two types of podcasts. But I think the default is I'm going to do a podcast so I can get downloads and get more listeners, and then I'm going to grow my business with it. And of course, that has some relevance, but I think you've painted a very clear picture of what that really means, which I think is important for people to understand.
Yes. And again, most people will end up building a content engine because it is probably one of the best use cases for podcasting, just to put it super bluntly. If you think about it again, input device, I'll actually just make it really simple. Most content marketers, to create content, interview a subject matter expert to then turn that into a blog. That's how most people do it. All I'm recommending, press record, upload to Spotify. That's the whole difference. So you can do that. So that's first podcast approach. Second podcast approach is what I refer to as the public figure podcast. If you think about distribution channels like social and email and webinars and all these other different channels for distribution, they can create exponentially great reach, but it's relatively, typically speaking, shallow. I can't make a fully completed thought on social because I will literally run out of characters. So you just can't. So there is a lack of nuance that is typically available in these larger channels. So what people that already have very large followings, as you already outlined, someone like an Amy Porterfield, the client that we work with that's in the top 0.5%, his name is Jay Schwedelson. Like, he hosts a conference every year. In between his conferences, he has 30,000 people attend virtually. So, like, good following. And that's like, sorry, I'm going to get really nerdy. The average person is in each conference for 8 hours live. So, like, large following, very actively engaged audience. When we launched his podcast, we took an already actively engaged audience in a shallow medium and took them to a medium with significant depth. And when we looked at it through that lens, it created what I call casual consumers and converted them into raving fans. So Jay already had a pretty good like fan base from all of his speaking engagements. He's like, this turned it up to 11. And he now has people that post about him all the time on his podcast episodes. And then the other component that this turned into for his business is he now releases about 5 episodes a week, which is ridiculous, but they're all somewhere in the ballpark of like 6 to 10 minute episodes. So relatively short, relatively easy to consume. And what he has now found is a direct correlation from when he launched the podcast to then expansion revenue within his existing customer base, because his customers are now spending every single day with him specifically. And it's the easiest way to scale the founder's reach and brand, because you record once and then it distributes to thousands. So if you have an existing following, but it's shallow and you're looking for greater depth, that's the value of a public figure podcast. If you were to measure anything on downloads, it is public figure podcast. That is the only thing, because it is helpful. I would also look at other mediums and seeing specifically, does across the board our audience growth increase. So do I see an increase in LinkedIn followers? Do I see an increase in our LinkedIn or our newsletters? Along those lines that you see audience growth significantly, isolating all of their variables. If you're like, we weren't doing a podcast, and then we launched a podcast, and then everything else went up. Crazy idea. Probably the podcast. So you can measure on that. And then it is also social reach, because what has ended up happening for Jay is he always struggled to know what to say in these social channels, because he's like, I just want new content in my brain. With the podcast, he now has new content every day. It's like he just kind of posts the clip or like a thought from the podcast of like, hey, go check out the podcast. So it's actually created a great flywheel for him to drive his audiences to specific capture points. That is really the primary ways in which you would measure a public figure podcast, would just be specifically audience growth overall across all channels. And then if you wanted to measure it, it would be downloads. And then it just depends on the platform that you're using, because depending on your platform, there may be other things like impressions, reach, clicks. There, every platform's a little bit different in what they can and can't measure. And then the final thing that I didn't know until probably the past 8 months is just like log in. Like log into specifically like the Apple podcast hosting platform, because Apple actually has specific analytics that are in their analytics platform that don't port back over to your Buzzsprout or your Spreaker or your whatever else. So do that for both Apple and Spotify. And then inevitably, potentially also YouTube, because YouTube's making a pretty significant podcast play. So though that's the second form. Before I get
All right. Well,
into
before,
my
yeah, I was gonna say,
favorite.
before we get into three, you want to just really quickly recap one and two from like, here's what I called it and here's what it's good for? Because I made notes, but I want to kind of hear it from you. And then we'll get into three, which is really your special sauce. So.
Yes. So content engine, primary purpose is you need an input device through which you can post produce a mass amount of content. You would measure primarily on content output. And what I mean by this is specifically how many assets do we create as the primary metric of success. Some people will hate that because they're like, no, it's just a volume game. And it's like, sorry, I have this new framework that I've recently learned. It's actually not that new, but it's just like more better new. And for most people in the quality versus quantity debate, they don't have enough quantity to understand what quality is. So like, just do more. Most of it will be bad. Couple things will be good and be like, well, why was that one good? Analyze it, do more of that. But like, people are like, I only post once a week. Like, I really want to make sure I'm quality over quantity. Dumb. Post more. Like, figure out what works, then do
I
more of it. Sorry, I get really passionate about that.
like that.
That's content engine. Public figure podcast is you have an existing audience that is a shallow, casual consumer, and you want to convert them into raving fans because of the depth that is provided through a podcast. Again, primary metric of success, audience reach, audience growth, downloads, anything else your podcast hosting platform will provide you. And the other thing that I should have mentioned would be charts. Chartable recently disappeared, and that was the primary way that people measured. Podchaser is a new charting platform that I have seen and will help you understand where your show is even ranking in your category. And for public figure podcasts, it's helpful to be like, I'm in the top three podcasts. Like, it gives you an extra layer of authority and credibility that's externally validated. And then the other one would be a tool called Listen Notes. Listen Notes is a podcast search engine, but also tells you global rankings. So like, for example, my show is in the top 10% of globally listened to shows. So as I'm trying to get people on my show, or as I'm trying to build my authority, that's a really helpful thing. Just like call out like 10% of the globe that listens to podcasts listens to mine. Pretty
It's kind
neat.
of like the charts or the listen notes score is sort of the equivalent if this is new to you of sort of like I'm an Amazon bestseller in my very
Yes.
specific niche, but right, like I'm a but for 1 minute of one day I was the number one underwater
Yes.
basket weaving book on and but it's a credibility marker and these are
Yes.
more to me more meaningful and consistent than the example I just gave, right? Like, and you'll be surprised as a podcast host. Maybe you won't now that you've learned from Mason some of the true numbers, but like it doesn't take that much to become top 10%. It's mostly consistency and actually publishing your thing and then getting into that top 5, 1%. Of course, those become more difficult, but how cool is it to even say I'm in the top five, I'm a top 5% podcast. And with the right strategy, as you start to outline, like you can totally do that. So this is really good. I'm excited to hear your thoughts on the this third option because the first two I think are what most people think of option one. Anyone who's a little more mature or more of a veteran in their business or already has an established audience is probably leaning on number two a lot. Like, man, I just need to go deeper with my people in various forms and fashions. And as you talked about, some of that's consumption. Some of that may also be relationship building, right? Like I interview my top clients. Like that's a way to go deeper with them and then with the people that they know, which again, and just to give a little editorial, I think I started the Seven Figure Leap podcast probably with bucket one, like, hey, I'm just going to create content, get downloads, you know, like most of us do. And we do some of that. But I think so far, we'll hear what number three is. So far, the thing that I've definitely got the most value from is number two. So I walked into a room in a conference 2 weeks ago, and someone's like, I loved your interview with Dennis Yu on, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, you listen to my show? He's like, yeah, I think I started following you like on LinkedIn, but when I saw your show, I started listening, and I feel like you're like my best friend, my best business friend, or whatever, right? We never met. And so I think there's a lot to be said for this kind of public figure depth of relationship. So anyway, Mason, yeah, I'm excited to hear number three and your take on
Yeah, so admittedly, number three is my favorite because it
that.
creates the most predictability in pipeline generation and revenue generation. So if you're going to build an account-based marketing program and you are very early stage, but you've got a clear market fit and like you know where you serve best, I don't recommend doing the full-scale EBM program as you'd read online. We help build those for some of our clients, but they're typically in that $10 million-$50 million range. So like large organizations. For our smaller clients that are in the like 1 to 3 or 3 to 10 range, we actually recommend a podcast. And I'll tell a quick story of how I unintentionally built a podcast that generated $1 million in revenue annually and has so done so for the past 3 years. So pretty predictable. I launched a podcast called The Marketing Ladder that was focused on how to build a marketing career. I then interviewed people that were actively hiring, and the pitch to get them on the show was relatively simple. Hi, I run a career focused on how do you build a marketing career. It looks like you're hiring. I'd love to interview you, understand how you went from here to here in your career journey. And at the end, I'd love to plug the roles you're hiring for. And then I'll help send talent your way based on people that listen to the show. Because people that listen to the show are typically looking for a new job. Unsurprisingly, people that were trying to hire loved the idea of free promotion for their roles. So I ended up over the course of about 1.5 years or 2 years interviewing 120 chief marketing officers and VPs of marketing, or like agency owner founders. Really helpful. What I didn't anticipate, I like genuinely just wanted to do that because I was trying to figure out how to build my career and I thought it would be interesting and I was my audience. I happened to work agency though. So what ended up happening is people would really struggle with talent and they're like, golly, I just need help like right now. And I was like, well, I sent a bunch of people your way. And they're like, yeah, but like the interview process just takes a while. Like, I just need somebody that can like get up and running quickly. I'm probably looking for an agency that can do this, this, and this. We do this, this, and this. Do you want me to talk faster to our sales team? They're like, that'd be amazing. And what it turned into is because
Awesome.
people liked and trusted me, because I had done everything in my power to help them when they needed help with their marketing programs, and they ended up looking for an agency. What often happened is people were like, hey, Mason, do you know somebody that can do this, this, and this? And I unintentionally became this like massive connector. And what ended up happening was like, wow, I could do this intentionally. Like, I could just say, who are our best fit customers and then get them onto the show. And the more I did research, what I learned is that roughly 70 to 80% of people will say yes to a podcast invite. So if you think about that in context, if you're doing like cold outbound to get meetings, you're looking at like if you're amazing and incredible, like a 5% conversion rate. But you change it from I'd like to book you for a discovery call to I'd like to hear about your journey. And suddenly, what is that, a 400% increase? It's actually greater than that. I'm not going to do the math, but like you jump from 5%.
It totally flips the status, right? And I think that's the key psychological thing is
Yeah.
if someone comes to you and they're like, even if it sounds like I want to serve you or giving you free advice, it's really like an ask, right? Like, hey, you're going to sell me something.
Yeah.
But if they come to you and they're like, I think you're awesome. I'd like to feature you and how awesome you are on my podcast, you know? It's like, well, yeah, I think I'd like that, right? So it
Yeah.
can be the exact same ask, but it's got a totally different posture to it. So I love that you said that.
Yes. And again, what ended up happening for me is over that time frame, people just ended up coming to me, building good relationships. And I, again, this was entirely unintentional, but I created a post engagement. Because what a lot of people do is they'll interview somebody and then just kind of say like, hey, it's great to have you on the show. bye. And like, they don't maintain the relationship. What I did, and it took me an hour once a month, so it's kind of time consuming, but it was worth it, is I actually went through every past guest that had been on the marketing ladder, and I looked at where they were, and I looked at what roles they were hiring for, and I actually tagged them. And my headline was like, if you're looking for a job, here are 48 CMOs that are actively hiring right now for these specific roles. And I would just tag them and list the roles. Not crazy content. Consistently went, for me, pseudo viral, like 10 to 30,000 impressions. So it got me in front of a lot of people. And again, I became the connector. And then I never asked them for anything. I just kept showing up every single month saying like, hey, it looks like you're hiring. Here are people that could like help you get a job. Crazy. And again, what that turned into is over 2 years, 120 one-to-one relationships with decision makers at very large companies. So when I inevitably went out on my own and launched Scrappy ABM, what I ended up doing is I actually went back to that same pool of people and I framed it as customer research. And I said, hey, I launched my own business. I need to get your thoughts and insight on what we're structuring as how we're going to do Scrappy ABM. Could I just steal 25 minutes of your time and kind of walk you through what the pitch is going to be? And you just tell me if that would be even remotely helpful or not. And they were like, I'd love to. So I asked 120 people, 60 said yes to getting pitched, 10 became customers. Crazy. And then from
Launched your
there,
whole business with it. Yeah.
yes, actually, yes, that's like that's how we got the first 10 customers. And then from there, I launched Scrappy ABM, the podcast. At this point, in about a year and a half, we've done 125 episodes. And what I have done now is I invite ABM experts to talk about the programs that they're running. Now you're thinking, Mason, why would you invite people that are already experts to talk about the thing that you sell? Great question. One, this content drives the larger business forward. So, like, it is helpful for me to actually create great content that can function as sales enablement content and provides actual external validation on our frameworks and thought processes. Super helpful to get industry experts to be like, I love that framework. And they just record it and then you turn it into a clip. Super helpful. That, like, the content engine is still something you should probably do at every stage, but like, how do you measure success? The other component is crazy thing. Everyone is resource strapped. Everybody. No one has enough time, energy in the day. So what ends up happening is after the episode, I say this, steal this exact script. Hey, so and so, that episode was awesome. I love that you and I are on the exact same wavelength on how to build an ABM program. Quick side note, I can guarantee like all of your friends are probably asking you for help, right? And they're like 100%. It's like, but you're probably slammed because of everything you just outlined. That sounds like it's super time consuming. You probably don't have time to like help your friends. And sometimes he will then say in response, sorry, I'm actually thinking about the exact conversation I just had earlier this week. And they say in response, yeah, like I genuinely have no time. And then I say, well, just as you think about it, because we're so on the same page around like how to build these programs, we actually have the capacity for a couple more clients. So like, if you want to help out your friends, I'd really appreciate an intro to anybody that like needs the help. Two things will happen. One, or sorry, three things will happen. One, they'll actually make introductions for you that same day because typically people that are experts have conversations frequently. So they will likely have somebody that like asked them for help in the past 3 weeks and like, golly, like this person asked for help. I didn't have the time. I kind of actually ghosted them. It would be amazing to make the introduction. And what you end up doing is actually relationship and reputation management for them because it doesn't just become a no. It becomes, I'm so sorry, I'm slammed, but I actually just connect with this person. They're amazing. You should go hang out with them. So it's reputation and relationship management for them. The second thing that will happen is they will say, actually, I need your help because I am super slammed. And even though I know how to do it, I don't have the time to do it all myself. Can you help me? Or the third thing that will happen is they'll just say, hey, I'll keep that in mind. And like, you didn't lose anything.
No harm, no how. Yeah, no harm, no foul. Yeah.
And then what I now do is I keep posts back and clips back. So I post a clip when the episode releases. And then additionally, I post like random clips throughout sporadically. We're actually standing up our company page, and our company page is going to be exclusively podcast clips. So we're going to keep people engaged by continuing to promote them and show off their expertise every single day. So, like, that's the long tail. And then eventually, the other thing for context is if you think about the podcast episode specifically with an expert breakdown, I actually have a question with like, what were the roadblocks to implementation? And some people will actually tell you, well, it's still actually a challenge today. But, and then they'll walk you through the things that they're currently struggling with. If you can solve for that, say, hey, by the way, like, I'm not trying to pitch you, but you mentioned this. If you ever have the money, or you shouldn't say money, if you ever have the budget, more elegant way, if you ever have the budget and you wanted someone to like come in and help knock that out for you, we actually do that for our clients. Like, again, I'm not trying to be pushy here. And the other thing that I actually do for a lot of people is I'll actually send them all the templates and the resources for how we would do it for them, just blank. And then they see the process, but they don't have the guidance through it, and they end up wanting to buy the guidance. So I did that yesterday with somebody that's needing help with an account-based podcast. So I literally sent them all of our templates, all of our frameworks, but they're all just blank. So he's going to try to do it. If he gets it done, great. Like, awesome. He'll point back to me as a reason for his success when he talks to everybody else about his incredible podcast. But likely he's going to be like, God, I just have the time, energy, and effort to figure this out. Even though I have the roadmap and the templates to do it, let me just go hire the guide that will walk me through that process. So that's how you end up building an account-based podcast.
I love that. So in deference to time, we won't go through all of that in detail again, but definitely there was a lot there. So like I would encourage people to kind of like rewind, go through that last part of Mason talking about how his own podcast is the strategy behind how he's using his own podcast to generate business and think of the parallels for yourself. But with a little bit of time that we do have left, Mason, if someone's listening and they're like, maybe they're not in quite as niche of, it's ABM is like you said, like one of the benefits is just educating on what ABM is and then talking about that there are people that do all kind of nuanced versions of this in addition to what we do. That's cool. What if someone's more traditional? So let's say they do, I don't know, pick anything. They run Facebook ads for a specific industry and they're like, I want to do a podcast. And I think this number three is really what I need to be doing. But like, help them think through the strategy of who would they invite or like what would be a strategy that would allow them to kind of do this account-based version of a podcast and something that's not quite so niche or so in depth as what you do.
Yeah, I would rewind for a moment to my original podcast, which was called The Marketing Ladder. So, like, it was marketing careers, which from a framing perspective is fairly niche, but it's just like a careers podcast. It's essentially a podcast on like how I built my career. So again, I would look at it through the lens of do a quick search of just like, are there other podcasts already that talk about Facebook ads? Probably, but actually probably less than you think. And then what's your unique framing on it? So like context wise, there's actually like probably 10 or 15 podcasts specific to account-based marketing. I just added the word scrappy to it, and that adjective makes it interesting. So I would think about your unique framing for that. And you can talk about a very broad topic, but with a unique framing, it feels more niche. And then the other component is just, again, for simplicity. We had a client that had a super, actually, some of our clients have super broad topics. Like one of them is just a small business podcast. So it's like everything small business. It's everything. It's just like we literally have interviewed like fractional CFOs, HR experts, marketers, sellers. It's the most broad show of all time. We still invite specific experts that we want to be our customers onto the show. And like it's a broad topic, but the guest pool can be pretty specific and niche. And like nobody has to know that it's like, oh, we actually only interview this range of people. So there's that, or that's the top 0.5%. In order to like grow a really big show, you inevitably have to have a pseudo broad topic. So his show is called Do This, Not That. It is literally like actionable marketing tactics of like what you should do and not do. Very basic. But we invite very high up leaders at very large brands that we want to close as a part of that strategy. So
Got it.
again, even if it's broad, you can still invite people that you want to work with. And that's really it. Like, who do I want to work with? Let me invite them onto a podcast, spend an hour with them in an interview where they actually like me because I'm talking about how amazing they are. Everyone links their ego stroked just a little bit. And then at the end, you're like, hey, this was awesome. By the way, here's an offer. And the offer could be nothing crazy. Like, do you know anybody that's like needs help with the stuff that you talk about? Oh, you do? Because everybody talks to you about it? Awesome. I do it too. Can I help you help them? Great. Like, super light offer that everyone benefits from. So don't be
I like that.
sleazy, because I've been on some shows in which it was like a 30-minute recording slot. They interviewed me for 10 minutes. We're like, hey, by the way, we'd like some product feedback. And then like hit me with a demo. And I was like, oh, I didn't want to be on a demo. Like I didn't sign up for this. And again, if you're like, well, Mason, didn't you say that you asked people? But I asked people. I said, I am launching a business. You were a former podcast guest and someone that I would consider a professional colleague and friend now. And I actually asked, I have put together a pitch deck. Will you listen to my pitch deck and give me feedback? It's all just expectation setting. So again, you can do whatever you want on your podcast. If you're like, hey, by the way, after this, we're going to do like a 15-minute product demo. People might be like, that's weird, but at least you told me up front. So that's fine.
I think, and then really what you said there at the end is really what I was trying to drive home. So if you want to take an account-based marketing approach to your podcast, start with who do I want to work with? And that could be ideal clients, but that could also be ideal partners, which you kind of describe with what you're doing mostly with your show. It's a lot of partners. It's a lot of referral partners, collaborators, people like that. But either, and or clients, partners, and then how do you structure the theme, the name of your podcast so that you have a good excuse to talk to those people, right? I think is that am I do I kind of have the gist of what the third bucket here is really about is beginning with the end in mind about if I'm going to use this to get leads, very targeted individuals I want to work with, not leads, and partners, just make sure that my show is positioned in a way that it makes very good sense that I would reach out to them and ask invite them into a conversation with me.
And final thought on that, because I didn't do this until the past 2 months, and I feel like an idiot that I missed this opportunity for the past two or past year that I've been doing it. ABM is not often a title. Like it is in some organizations. And but if they have an established like ABM person, they don't typically need us. It's typically like a CMO, and it's for Chief Marketing Officer, VP of Marketing, Director of Demand Generation. Like those are typically the titles we sell to. So I've been reaching out to get them onto the show. And I've had people that would send back and say like, oh, we're in the really early stages of our ABM program. I really don't have a success story to share. And I was just like, cool, let me know when you do. What an idiot. Like, I could have said, hey, if you need help, we actually do that. And I started to do that, and it
It's
gets
funny you bring
discovery
that up.
calls.
This is exactly what we do.
And like, again, not sleazy, just like, hey, totally hear you. If you want help, like, go check out the podcast. There's 120 some odd episodes with experts that are like breaking down their program. So you can probably learn a lot there. And then, by the way, if you end up getting into a snag, like, feel free to shoot me some questions or subscribe to our newsletter. Or, like, if you really need to go faster, hire us. Like, is that easy? So I just think about it in that lens of even if you go after people that aren't a perfect fit for your show right now, but they actually address why they're not, you can overcome that objection, and that objection might be a good reason for them to become a customer.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love it. I love it so much. This is really good. I've been in a podcasting space for years. This is one of my favorite interviews. I mean that sincerely. I'm talking about the
Thank you.
practicalities of what does a successful podcast mean? And, gearing that measure of success towards your goals and your brand and your personality and the things that you want out of podcasting. We just don't talk about this enough. So this is super refreshing, Mason, to kind of name it and claim it and be like, you can do any of these three or a combination thereof, but you need to know what you're doing. And if you've been kind of in the motion and you're like, gosh, I hadn't really thought about this, but I've already got a podcast. Great. The beautiful thing is you can now pivot a little bit and get more specific on what you're trying to accomplish so you know if you're being successful and be able to measure it is so important. So, Mason Cosby, you're the man. Thank you so much for sharing. I would love for you to kind of share next steps for people. I don't know if it's your podcast or where you want to direct people if they want to know more about you and learn more about account-based marketing.
One final thing that I realize I want to make super, super clear on how you actually measure the success of an account-based podcast. Target account relationships that are developed, pipeline, and revenue.
Love it.
Like, if you want to actually make money, this is probably the best way that is the most directly tied to pipeline that is also trackable. So that's how you would
That
actually measure
makes
the.
total sense. I just want to kind of say that if you're in the world of like maybe you're a smaller business, you have a CRM, right? And you think of like your pipeline. Well, in bucket three here, the way Mason described that, if you set up your podcast in that way, you can literally envision a guest and you can be like, is this individual belong in this pipeline? Yes, which pipeline do they belong in? And then you can do your normal marketing sales funnel pipeline stuff with them, but you're choosing who you want to invite into that process. And then, obviously they get to choose yes or no, depending on how they interact with you in the podcast. But that's a really good point. Bucket one, You're kind of like, hey, all the socials and all the reach and all the impressions. Bucket two is that, but really for your own audience. Like, how am I going deeper with my own audience? Am I growing my personal following versus like the random people that find me on the internet in bucket one? But bucket three is very much measured by how much business did this get me? How many qualified leads did I get? How many sales conversations, right? So I'm really glad you inserted that. So yeah, please now share next steps for people that want more Mason in their life.
I don't know who would, but if you do, it's really easy. I went with the Spaceballs approach. So, like, everything is scrappy ABM. For those of you who haven't watched Spaceballs, go fix your life. Go watch Spaceballs. Second,
Yes.
Google scrappy ABM. There's a podcast, there's a website, there's a newsletter, there's a LinkedIn, and then that's about it right now. There will be more coming, but like, long and short, if you really want to stay up to date with everything, go subscribe to our newsletter because we distribute everything there. And if you want to learn more stuff, go to the podcast, and it's a really deep dive on all these kinds of topics, not just on the podcasting front, but also like the more programmatic approach that is scalable ABM.
I love that. Yeah. And I mean, one takeaway I have that I'm going to do, and I would encourage listeners, if again, if you're like, man, this is really good, I want to see an example of this in action, go look at Mason's podcast, look at who he's interviewing, look at, subscribe and see what that looks like so that you can see what a well-run ABM oriented bucket three podcast is in action. And I don't know if I understand what you do is more for the bigger companies with more established revenue, but I think for anyone, if you call your customers clients, like you have individuals that you want to work with, take your version of this to me is like huge takeaway here is like take your version of what ABM means to maybe a smaller, even solopreneur business and go choose your clients. Go pick them out and say, these are the people I want to work with, and then go proactively do that and use a podcast as a huge tool in that is what we just learned. So Mason, you're amazing. Everyone go to the Scrappy ABM podcast, Google that term, go get your hat. And Mason, you're great. So thanks again for your time and all the great wisdom you've shared.
Well, Dustin, thank you so much for having me and put this all together. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Scrappy ABM. If you're looking for more content just like this, I highly recommend you go subscribe to our newsletter. We release weekly playbooks so that you have the actionable ways in which you can start to build an ABM program today. Just go to scrappyabm.com/newsletter to subscribe. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you'd leave a 5-star review and hit the notification bell so you never miss an episode. I look forward to seeing you in the next one.